Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome once again to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr in the Sunbury Motors Studio, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show sponsored by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street, Sunbury. It has been a busy half hour in sports. Now we'll talk Steeler football, Eagles football, and Big Ten football coming up a little bit later on, but the biggest news of the day, you just heard moments ago, the Philadelphia Phillies removing manager Charlie Manuel from his position. He will be replaced by Ryan Sandberg. Now, the reason I say removed, because it didn't really sound like the word fired came up. They just didn't renew his contract, had no plans to renew the contract that expired at the end of this year. So the soon-to-be 70-year-old, now out of a job as it would appear. Here's the sound. Here's the sound of the room in Philadelphia as Ruben Amaro made the announcement.
During the last several days of our recent road trip, Charlie and I spent a lot of time discussing the future of our ball club, our organization. And in the course of those discussions, I informed Charlie that we will not be renewing his contract after the 2013 season. I think Charlie understands this decision and the fact that we're making a managerial change. That it is in the best interest of the future of the organization.
Now, Charlie Manuel did not show much emotion at all one way or another, but Ruben Amaro appeared to.
You people may not know the the relationship I have had with Charlie. He's a special person. This is difficult for me. I hope he stays in our organization.
And as I said earlier, he was invited to stay on in the organization. Ruben Amaro mentioned asking him for his help and staying with the organization. However, Charlie did not say one way or another whether he was interested in doing that or whether, you know, officially that he'd like to coach again. That's something he's going to think about. Charlie Manuel's comments.
I'd like to thank Dave Montgomery. Also, I'd like to thank Ed Wade. He's the guy that hired me. And some people used to tell me I got Ed fired. And I look at that, and believe me, if I did that, I would have took his place. And then, you know, like, I want to thank Ruben. I want to thank Pat Gillick. I want to thank everybody in the Philly organization for giving me the chance. I've had some of the greatest times that I ever had in my life. Philadelphia has been the highlight of my career. I love everything about the fans. I love the city. I've talked Philly baseball everywhere I go. And you know, everything, I want everything to go out on a very positive attitude and note.
Very, very interesting day from the Philadelphia Phillies standpoint and fan standpoint, simply because we all kind of expected, as Phillies fans, to see Charlie Manuel not come back as manager, but we're a little bit surprised that he would be removed not only before the end of the season, but right after his 1,000th career victory. Charlie, though, had an interesting take on it.
I'm mad because it took the best seat in the house away from me. And I've been sitting there watching the Phillies play, and I've been sitting there watching the games every day, something that I love.
More of the comments of Charlie Manuel here as he was asked a question about whether he'd manage again.
I think what I need to do, I need to go get some time off and sit down and think. And I think I think I can manage for a couple more years or maybe two or three years. And I'm not saying that's what I want to do. I want to get off and think about it. And, of course, somebody's got to be interested in you.
So that's an interesting twist to the whole story here. Is Ruben Amaro kind of leads you to believe that Charlie Manuel would stay on and help the team out? However, from that comment, it looks like Charlie Manuel may be more interested in trying to find somewhere else to go as a manager in maybe a different, obviously not in Philadelphia, but maybe somewhere else, whether it be the National League or American League. He was asked, though, about Ryan Sandberg taking over. And as I said, many Phillies fans and people watching over the last year expected this to happen eventually. And here was Charlie's thoughts on Ryan Sandberg.
I like Ryan Sandberg. I've liked him ever since the first day I met him. And I think Ryan Sandberg, who he is, he's a Hall of Fame player. He went back to the minor leagues and managed. I think that's tremendous. I think of where he's at, I think he definitely deserves a chance in the managing the major leagues.
So once again, Charlie Manuel out as the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies immediately. The interim manager for the rest of the season will be Ryan Sandberg. So Ryan Sandberg will be the interim manager now. That is not an official job that he will have next year. Obviously, Ruben Amaro Jr. and the Phillies will be looking to fill that position once the season ends. That ends a tenure of 9 full seasons for Charlie Manuel at the helm. 5 NL East championships, 2 National League championships, and a World Series. He has a regular season record of 780 and 636, postseason record of 27-19. Overall, he has 1,000 wins, 826 in the loss column. He has never had a losing record. 81-81 was the mark last season, which was his worst full season as a manager, although the Phillies are at 53-67 right now, and obviously if he were to finish the season, would have a losing record at that point. But again, Charlie Manuel out as the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. Ryan Sandberg will finish the season as the interim manager. If you want to see more on this, head to stevejonesshow.com. That catches you up on what I said was a busy day here, but time now to talk a little football. Got a lot of football to talk about with the Steelers, the Eagles. We'll talk a little bit about the Big Ten as well. So it's Steve Buscette from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the Steelers, John Marks of the Eagles, Adam Rittenberg on the Big Ten. Go from baseball to football as we continue on the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This August, when you think Sunbury Motors Kia, think awesome! Awesome!
Wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Yes, it's awesome August at Sunbury Motors Kia. How about brand new 2013 Optima Hybrids? Discounted over $4,000, starting at $23,758. Plus 0% financing for up to 60 months. How about the all-new, gorgeous 2014 luxury Cadenza sedan? Discounted over $5,400 and starting at $33,993. And if you're still looking for nothing during awesome August, Sunbury Motors Kia still has 0% financing for up to 60 months on all 2014 Serenos, starting at $23,499, and 2013 Optimus starting at $19,974. So visit Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf or at sunburymotors.com, where awesome August is happening now.
Must qualify with special incentives apply. KMF bonus cash and financing to qualified customers. Tax and tags extra.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
All right, welcome back to SJS on this Friday. Great to have you with us as we roll through. It's going to be a good show today. Looking forward to talking to Ed Buscette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have their second preseason game coming up. John Marks from 97.5, the Fanatic in Philadelphia. John always covers the Philadelphia Eagles, so we'll get a read on their camp. And Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. We'll be talking to him about how the big picture looks in the Big Ten. So we have a big show coming up for you today. All of it's brought to you by our good friends, of course, at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Ah, boy, you name the beverage, they have it. Oh, beer? Yeah, did I mention beer, by the way? You have to stock up for the weekend. You need to stock up for the weekend. So many great things going on across the area. You want to make sure you're stocked and ready to go. The first high school scrimmages, by the way, are coming up tomorrow. Little League World Series is up in our neighborhood. And you want to kick back and watch some games on TV, you need to be fully stocked with all the beverages they have at Brewers Outlet. Snacks, plenty of snacks, lots of snacks. You need to bring snacks. You're going to go with you up to Williamsport. You're going to meet snacks when you go to those high school football scrimmages. They have all the snacks you can possibly ask for and hot roasted peanuts. Oh, yeah. It's all at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Mention what's going on in today's show. Looking forward to it very, very much. And plenty to talk about as well. We mentioned yesterday instant replay in Major League Baseball coming up next season. And again, it's an idea that I've championed for a long time, and that is managers' challenges. The reason I've championed it is that you have to manage the game anyway, and who comes out to argue the calls? The manager. So since the manager comes out to argue the calls, why not give them the power to challenge? They'll get one the first six innings and two from the seventh inning on. I can see very rare instances. I would say in the first six innings, you're going to see a challenge once every 2 days total in Major League Baseball. Now, from the seventh inning on, you're going to see a few more. But I don't want to hear how baseball, using technology, is getting away from, quote, the human element. Who's looking at the replay? I mean, that's what has always bothered me about this. Who's looking at the replay? I've gone by the replay booth at Beaver Stadium. It's right next to our broadcast booth, right next to us. It appears there are human beings in there looking at the replays. And they don't always get it right. It's not going to be a perfect system. You know, we've already seen, I've given you two Penn State football instances the last 2 years that have really told you the story about imperfections of instant replay. Matt Lehman scores against Nebraska. It was still ruled a fumble, and Nebraska got the ball back. It was not the right call. But conversely, Penn State beat Purdue the year before, in part because when Purdue was driving, Nick Suke trapped the ball. They called it an interception. Jack and I looked at the replay right away and quickly agreed, the two of us, that he trapped the ball. But the replay official said that he didn't trap the ball, and Penn State had an interception, did not overturn the call. So there's one that worked for Penn State and an example where one worked against Penn State. So it's not perfect, but it's far better than anything that you're going to get. And in college football, they do tell you every play is reviewed, which is true, but they do have coaches' challenges. Each coach does have a challenge during the game. Now, with the system in place, I can tell you, I have not one time seen a coach's challenge in college football work. Never. They are looking at every play. At least in theory, they're looking at every play. And you'll see coaches sometimes burn a timeout to give them extra time to look. If they're not buzzing down to take a look at it, you waste a timeout. You waste a challenge. Every challenge I've seen in a game in college football, not one has ever resulted, at least when I've seen it, in the play being overturned. But they do have a challenge available to each coach in college football. In baseball, you'll end up with three in a game. And that one in the first six innings is not going to carry over, by the way. There'll be no carryover. So in other words, if you don't use your challenge in the first six, it's like the first half timeout in basketball, the use it or lose it. Either use it or you lose it in the first six innings. So it's not going to give you three from the seventh inning on. You'll still just have two. And it's just a much better system. You might as well, instead of having the manager run out of the dugout, yell, scream, waste time, get in somebody's face about what's going on. Yeah, it riles up the fans. But the entire object of being an umpire, the entire object of being a referee, is to get it right. There really is no other job that the umpire or a referee has other than to get it right. I don't care whether it's pointing out a mistake in a lineup change or making a call at first base. The entire job is to get it right. What other job is there? Kevin yesterday was talking about being neutral. Neutral what? I don't care if you're, you know, if you're getting it right, you are neutral. That's their entire job. Get it right. They'll make mistakes. And you can't use it on balls and strikes, which is an obvious. Everybody knows you can never use it on balls and strikes. So that part of it's always going to be in dispute. You're going to get barking out of the dugout about balls and strikes. But at least the ability to get things right. You know, take, for example, the Mets now have one no-hitter. Johan Santana threw his no-hitter. But if Mike Matheny had this system a year ago, that no-hitter would have been broken up. And the Cardinals would have had a threat going because they would have had a runner on second base. And he went out and argued vociferously that the ball hit the chalk. The replay showed the ball was fair. It hit the chalk. That no-hitter would have been by the boards, and maybe the Cardinals come back and win that game because they have a runner in scoring position. In the end, didn't go because there's no replay. Santana has the lone New York Mets no-hitter. Now it's the San Diego Padres as the holdout in terms of not having a no-hitter. But that's where replay can come in. You can't automatically, can't in the NFL, you automatically have touchdowns and turnovers being reviewed. That's automatic. So really coaches are now saving challenges in the NFL because those are two automatic reviews. In baseball, Kevin was talking yesterday about, well, how about reviewing home runs, making that automatic? You really can't do that in baseball. You really can't do that. I mean, what if the hit's a double? You can't do that's the reason you can't do that. It's not as definitive as to whether it's a home run or not. Now down the line, you'd have to look at it. But take the home run in the Rangers Indians game that was called wrong. That wouldn't be an automatic review. You'd have to have the manager come out and challenge it. You have three challenges, so I mean, I don't think an automatic review does anything. And it's not going to slow the game down. It's not going to slow the game down. If you're going to run out, argue, yell, and scream anyway, might as well take the time to look at the replay. Coming up next half hour, Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers camp. Then John Marks in the 4 o'clock hour talking about Eagles camp. And Adam Rittenberg gives us a tour around the Big Ten in the final half hour of the show today. It's a big show today, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. We're headed to the bottom of the hour. And news coming up next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. News Radio 1070 WKOK, SJS, rolling through this Friday afternoon with you. The Little League World Series is underway. It's a big weekend. And State football is going to have one more scrimmage this weekend. Yesterday, Bill O'Brien did talk about where things stand with his quarterbacks. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. And then Ed Bouchette's going to join us on the phone. And Ed Bouchette's going to talk about Pittsburgh Steelers camp. He's one of the finest beat writers in all of the National Football League. He's been covering the Steelers for many, many years. So we'll get his read on how the Steelers are doing. John Marks next half hour on Eagles camp, and Adam Rittenberg on the Big Ten in the final half hour. So a big show today, all brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. You name it, they have it, the beverages. And, of course, did I mention beer? Yes, plenty of great domestics. And also, snacks, lots of snacks. You need to stock up on snacks. You never know who's going to stop by on the weekend. Plus, you want to kick back and enjoy anyway yourself. Probably have a barbecue all set for this weekend. It's the middle of August right now. Barbecue season's starting to wind down. You need to have the beverages and the snacks for it. And on top of it, they have fresh roasted peanuts. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm safely ensconced, by the way, in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's get to Penn State football news for a moment before we then transition to the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ed Bouchette. The Nittany Lions will go into Beaver Stadium one more time tomorrow. It will be the final time they go into Beaver Stadium during the preseason, unless they go next Sunday. There had been some talk, and it's only talk, that they were considering doing maybe an open practice for the student body next Sunday, but they haven't made a final decision on that yet. So there'd been some open, loose talk about that. But in terms of a formal go into the stadium and put together a practice and another scrimmage situation, they're supposed to go in there tomorrow. They did practice this morning at 9:30. They also practice. They're going to practice tonight at 7:30, then go into the stadium tomorrow afternoon. They were in the stadium Sunday, and then they were in the stadium on Wednesday. And people, of course, are wondering what right away, and justifiably so, how is the quarterback situation playing out? And Bill said point blank that between Tyler Ferguson and Christian Hackenberg, it is even. It is even between the two. I can tell you in watching and observing that it seems even to me as well. I don't really see at this moment any difference between the two, and it's even in terms of the quality of it. This is not even with two guys making mistakes, because believe me, I've seen quarterback competitions where it was even, and it was even through mistakes. This is even through quality. They both have a very good handle on the offense, and that's going to be a big plus moving forward, that both of them have a great handle on it. The other part is, knock on wood, they've been able to stay relatively healthy so far. And you still have one more week of camp to go. They'll break camp Friday next week. In fact, the Friday practice next week's a 6:30 a.m. practice, because it's move-in weekend next weekend at Penn State. Classes begin on Monday the 26th. So you're talking a week from Monday, everybody will be in class. So they'll break camp as of Thursday night next week, and then have two early morning practices on Friday and Saturday at 6:30 in the morning next week. So this scrimmage coming up tomorrow, or however they put it together, I mean, it's a pseudo-scrimmage, is going to be a very important one tomorrow in determining a lot of things. Now, let's get to the health part of it. Ben Klein has a banged-up shoulder, but he's going to be okay. He should be getting back in soon. Adam Gress, leg injury, he should be getting back in soon. But Brent Wilkerson, that back injury has him out. And Deshaun Hamilton, the freshman, also is out. But that is the injury list. And, of course, Brad Barrs. I mean, Brad Barrs with the Achilles. We can't forget that, but it happened during the offseason. So I think you forget it until you start looking to see where the depth is going to be at defensive end. That's where a guy like Evan Schwann is stepping in. I know they like a guy like Garrett Sickles very, very much. So the Wilkerson injury has opened up the door for Adam Brenneman. Penn State has four tight ends, and it's obvious who the first three are between Kyle Carter, Matt Lehman, Jesse James. And Brenneman has stepped up as that fourth tight end, and Adam has had a very good camp so far. He will definitely play for Penn State this season. So that's the domino effect of the Wilkerson injury. So that's where they stand right now. Injury-wise, and also heading into tomorrow's scrimmage. They have another practice tonight, and then they'll go into the stadium tomorrow for the third and final time in the preseason. Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's one of the top beat writers in the country. He's been covering the Steelers for many, many years. We apologize for the quality of this. We had to do this as a phone interview earlier today, but we talked to Ed about where the Steelers stand.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be with you.
Okay. Le'Veon Bell didn't go first time through. Any indication that he might be able to give it a crack this time through?
Yeah, I think, in fact, a new depth chart is out today, Steve, and they list him as a co-starter with Isaac Redman. Now, these depth charts have a way of being sometimes meaningless, and Mike Tomlin's sending a message, but they plan to get him in with the first team in Washington. They wanted to do that last week, but he had a small and he hit knees with another player, and it was sore, and then Mike held him out. But I think we're going to see a lot of him in Washington with the first team Monday night. And, you know, I think he's going to be their starter. I mean, I don't see, other than injury, why he wouldn't be.
And he needs to get out with the first line because, I mean, wouldn't it be counterproductive to put him out there with a leaky second line?
Yes, yes. I think that's part of their thinking is they don't want him out there with that second line. And, you know, they did that with LaRod Stevens howling last week when they found out Bell couldn't play. They wanted to see then LaRod, their other new guy, with their first team line. So, yeah, but, you know, that second team line is not very good either. So, that, you know, they're going to leave that up to, I guess, the Jonathan Dwyers and Baron Batches to run behind.
Yeah, I think that's called being sacrificed. Let's get to the tight end part of it. Keith Miller was a given for so many years, Ed. And now, of course, that position's not a given. How is that playing out initially?
Well, David Paulson's number one right now. You know, it's not a good situation, but they've had years where they didn't have, at least while I covered them, they didn't have good tight ends and managed to be okay. But they think Keith Miller can come back maybe after the bye week, which is after their London game. So I think he could miss. He could be back for the fifth game. David Johnson, who is more of a blocking tight end, he could come back with it within a couple weeks. He might even play in a preseason game. So, and Matt Spaeth, he'll be done for probably half the season. But you know, if they can get David Johnson back, and they have David Paulson, who played a lot as a rookie last year, they'll be okay at that spot until Heath Miller comes back, and then maybe he can pick up where he left off. He was the team MVP last year.
Yeah. Let's get to the wideout part. It's not an unseasoned group. I think there's a perception that it's thin, but when you really look at it, there are actually some seasoned players there. Is it just a question of keeping the seasoned guys healthy enough? Because after that, there is a dramatic drop off.
Yeah, I think that's the case with almost any team anymore. No, nobody has real depth in the NFL because of free agency and the salary cap. You know, I got this question. I think it was on my chat yesterday that the Steelers had a lot of unseasoned wide receivers. And if you look at it, Antonio Brown, who was their team MVP 2 years ago, is in his fourth season. Emmanuel Sanders is in his fourth season. Jericho Cotri's in his 10th season and third with the Steelers. And, you know, now you're getting down to the rookie, Marcus Wheaton. But he's come in here and picked things up pretty good. So that's four receivers I think you can work with. And now you're looking at maybe one more making the team.
Defensively, what's your read on Al Woods so far? He had a good opening outing, but has been consistent in practice where that opening outing is actually indicative of how he's practiced?
Al, they liked him last year, and he's a former fourth-round pick. I think this is his fourth team. He's one of those late-developing guys who has caught on. This is actually his second turn with the Steelers, who maybe the light went on last year. He's more of a versatile guy, nose tackle, can play nose tackle and end. You know, we'll see what he has as the year goes on. But I don't see him as a starter. I think he's strictly as a backup.
Any questions that you had going in that you think are starting to be answered in your mind?
I think inside linebacker, it didn't look like there was much depth there. And, you know, Larry Foote's getting a little old in the tooth, so they needed to find some people. I think they're finding some good young people there behind Lawrence Timmons and Larry Foote. That's one area. It looked like they maybe didn't have much depth at linebacker. that's kind of looking a little better. This McFadden kid, who, again, came out of nowhere last year, was on a practice squad for most of the year, looks pretty good in there. And they drafted a kid late, Williams. He looks good. So I think they're okay there. I think they'll be okay on the outside. Again, if anybody gets hurt, there's going to be problems, like an outside linebacker, on the offensive line, running back. You know, teams don't have the kind of depth they used to.
No, and there's no question. It is almost every club, it seems to be sent across the board. So the Steelers have a typical problem compared to a lot of other teams. What hasn't been answered in your mind?
What hasn't been answered yet is, Jarvis Jones, their first-round pick, they keep talking about how he's on track and everything else, but you just don't see the wow factor yet. I wrote about this the other day, and I think they're still waiting for him to break loose a little bit. And so far, he hasn't. But those outside linebackers, traditionally, they don't play a lot as rookies, and he's probably not going to start. They're going to try and work him in a rotation, especially on pass rush situations. But that's one of the big ones. The other one is depth behind their young starting line. They really don't have any right now.
Right.
Nobody's emerging.
And
they've had a couple guys get hurt. Young guys that, were just maybe hadn't shown anything yet. And healthy guys haven't shown anything yet either. So that could be a big problem because they had a lot of injuries in their line last year. And if they get those kind of injuries this year, I don't think they have even as good a depth as they had last year.
A couple of former Penn State receivers that are trying to somehow wedge their way into this thing. One is Derek Moy, and another one by way of Oklahoma's Justin Brown. What have you seen from the two of them, Ed?
Yeah, those two guys are really fighting for that, along with a kid, David Gilreath, for that fifth spot. And I know they were hoping Justin Brown could do some stuff on special teams and, work his way onto the roster. He has some potential. He's 6'2". Big kid, but he's going to have to return or do something like that. Moy's a tall, that's his asset. He's tall, so I would say neither of those guys have really stuck out yet. Although Justin Brown did kind of, I'm going to put quotes around this, lead them in receiving the first week. It wasn't very much, but he did. So and that fifth spot is really up for grabs, and nobody's been grabbing it yet, including those two.
They have Wilson out of Alabama, and we know they drafted Landry Jones. And, of course, the speed of this league is overwhelming to anybody who's young to begin with. Do they show any signs so far that they can be a capable, down-the-road backup, either one of those guys for you?
Steve, we have such a bad connection. I didn't get the full question there.
I was asking about Wilson and Landry Jones. The speed of the league is overwhelming for any quarterback. These guys are not contributors, but can they be down the road and either one show a sign of being a competent backup?
Well, Gronkowski. Bruce Gronkowski is competent. I think he could be the next Charlie Batch, stay here and be Ben's backup for a while. The rookie quarterback they got from Oklahoma, Landry Jones, has shown very little, either in practice or in the game the other night. And John Parker Wilson, I actually think he's looked better than the rookie, but that's probably natural. He's been around a little longer and Landry Jones is coming from a totally different kind of offense at Oklahoma where it was just bang, bang, get the ball and throw it. So it's probably natural that he's not cutting loose and he's thinking more than actual reacting and playing.
In order to see progress, what would you like to see in preseason game 2? two compared to what you saw in one.
Steve, again, we're having a real trouble hearing you here.
I'll ask you one more time. In order to feel like you're seeing progress, what do you think you need to see in preseason game two as opposed to one?
Yeah, these preseason games, it's not so much a team thing as it is individuals.
Right.
They don't play the first teams long. They don't game plan. They don't. They don't show a lot. A lot of times, So I think this team primarily needs two things to improve over last year. Needs to have a better, much better running game. They were 26th last year. They went to that zone blocking, outside zone blocking, and they drafted a running back in the second round. So they're trying. And they need to come up with more big plays on defense. They need sacks and they need turnovers. Their turnovers the last 2 years have been just terrible. Their secondary had 6 interceptions last year, and Curtis Brown, a late starter, had 2 late ones of the 6. So, I don't know what they do to come up with more often. The obvious answer is hang on to the football, but those are two areas that traditionally they've been great at, and really last year they were terrible.
Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We thank him for joining us. Had a chance to talk to him earlier today, and we apologize for the quality of the phone interview, but we're not going to apologize for the quality of the information he gave out, that's for sure. And again, that's the Steelers statistically looked like last year a great defense, but they weren't, because you can't be a great defense unless you're changing the tone of the game. You change the tone of the game when you get takeaways. You change the tone of the game when you get sacks. Yes, statistically, they were the number one defense in the league, but the reality is they were not the number one defense in the league. You can't be the number one defense in the league unless you combine stats like that with takeaways and with sacks. That's the only way you can do it. And why they didn't have that last year, I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody knows. I know Polamalu not being in and out certainly is an intangible player. But they need to get back to that if they really want to be a great defense again and help out an offense that's going to need some help. And, yes, the Le'Veon Bell news is the important part. They play Monday night against the Washington Redskins, and he's going to be playing with the first unit. They don't want to put him behind a leaky second line. It's counterproductive if they do. So that tells you what they think about Le'Veon Bell. And Jarvis Jones is off to a good start, not a great start in camp, but a good start. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're safely ensconced in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. In the next half hour, we'll transition from Steelers camp in Latrobe to go to Philadelphia and talk to John Marks about the Philadelphia Eagles. So we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.